It will be 9/11 times 2,356.
My God, that's... I don't even know what that is.
Nobody does.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to the bunker, everybody. It's a lovely Tuesday evening, 20th of June, I believe.
Yes, that is 6202006.
It is. And if you live in Europe, it's 2006.
Yeah, because you Europeans don't know how to do your dates right.
And those dots thing.
And that metric stuff.
Yeah, don't even get me started on the metric stuff. Oh, boy. You remember back in the... You wouldn't remember this. You're too young. Remember back in the early 70s when they were trying to get us all to go move to the metric system?
I remember that.
You'd drive along, there'd be a sign saying 1 kilometer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
0.8 miles or whatever it was, or the other way around. It was so annoying.
Sorry, we're not going there. We left Europe so that we wouldn't have to do metric. Our forefathers ran out rather than convert.
That's right.
So anyway, welcome to the bunker tonight. We begin the first of a three-part series with Jerry E. Smith about HAARP. And it's very timely because we talked about HAARP with Captain May the other night, and its possible use as a weather weapon on the 28th of July last year over the skies of Houston.
You know, it's very timely. Speaking of Houston.
Yes.
Because Houston is flooding. They've had 12 inches of rain or so.
It's more than that, actually. There are some areas of Houston that had over 12 inches as of Monday evening and were expected to get another 6 inches today.
But I
was talking with some fellows down in Houston. There were actually more people at work in Houston today than there were yesterday, just based on my informal and totally unscientific survey. But
three houses.
Yeah, yeah. And they said that it's not something that they enjoy, but it's kind of something that they get used to down there. And things are actually better now than they were before Tropical Storm Allison dumped all that rain. 2001, I forget which year it was, but it was about 5 years ago. They've done a lot of work as far as drainage ponds and retention ponds mm-hmm. and things like that. But still, it's on the ocean. It's a low-lying area. And when you get a foot and a half of rain in the span of 24 or 36 hours, you're going to get some ponding.
You are. You know, and also the Central American coast, the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
got hammered because some tidal waves came through there that were caused actually by a storm near Hawaii.
That is really bizarre. You know, I am really thankful we don't have to worry about stuff like that here in the heartland of the USA.
No, we just have to worry about mosquitoes and humidity and...
The New Madrid Fault.
The New Madrid Fault. Well, folks, we're getting a little further away from the New Madrid Fault, as we mentioned last night, and we'll talk more about that later.
Right.
But
yeah, there are other things of global import. In fact, we'll talk a little more about the New Madrid Fault and how some insurance agencies are trying to deal with that particular issue.
As we head up toward the summer solstice.
Yes.
Summer
officially begins tomorrow. I used to have a time written down so I could track it, but forgive me, I have misplaced it and totally spaced it off. But sometime tomorrow, the 21st.
It's usually like 2 in the morning or...
Well, yeah, it actually shifts from year to year, of course, because we don't go on a perfect 365-day year. But
no, we don't.
It is at some point during
the
day.
We do here in the bunker.
Which means we have to adjust every 4 years or so. We have...
We should,
mm-hmm.
but we don't. And you can't make us.
I have no idea where you're going.
Time is relative in the bunker.
That's right.
It's what we say it is.
There are other things that we hold absolute, but time, well.
That's right. The number of calories that we will permit you to reduce from our Krispy Kreme or the amount of caffeine you may remove from our coffee, those things are important.
Yes.
Time itself, well, it's fluid.
Well, looking around the globe as we take a look at our our world, at least in this physical plane.
Yes, if we're really here indeed.
Yes, Kim Jong-il is still shaking his little fist.
His hair is in its own time zone. I'm convinced of it, that hair. But you know what? You and I were talking about this at lunchtime, and you know, you guys miss out on a lot of really good stuff because we don't. We do not record our lunchtime conversations, but they're just like this.
More or less, yeah.
Pretty much. And in fact, you know, if we, who knows, if we play it right, you might actually be able to come home for lunch sometimes.
Yeah.
We were talking about Kim Jong-il and the whole fact that he seems to be a puppet with strings that go back to Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up the good question. I think it's brilliant. Perhaps this is not North Korea's missile. Perhaps it's a Chinese missile.
Yeah. There's some speculation out there by intelligence analysts who wonder if this missile might have something special about it, which is why it's being readied for launch.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this has some sort of stealth technology that the Chinese have developed, and they want to send it up to demonstrate that we won't be able to track it. And our intelligence guys, being intelligent, will figure out that this is not something that the North Koreans would have developed on their own. This is probably something that they've developed either in cooperation with the Chinese or were given by the Chinese.
Now, what I find really interesting about that sort of thinking is this is the very we're involved in military exercises off the coast of Guam right now. Looking right down the throat of Kim Jong-il, waving, hi, you're not far, we're here, we're watching,
well, in fact,
and we've got the Chinese with us.
Yes, and a couple of our Aegis warships, which are the cruisers and destroyers that have the anti-missile devices, batteries,
right,
that are right now off the coast of North Korea.
Right.
Specifically for this reason.
And the U.S. Missile Defense Shield.
And that was the other point that was announced today, and Bill Gertz in the Washington Times, who, interestingly enough, is a devotee of Sun Myung-moon, which I guess isn't too surprising since Sun Myung-moon actually owns the Washington Times, but that's a story for another podcast.
Yes.
Reported that the new U.S. ground-based anti-missile defense system, interceptor missile defense system, interceptor, that sounds like something you put on the back of your dog to get ticks and fleas to go away.
It probably is.
Was activated sometime within the last 2 weeks, and it is speculated that the reason it's been activated is because of Kim Jong-il's missile test.
And where is our beloved leader?
He's in Germany.
He's in Germany. Well, well, well. You don't suppose he went over there really to see a soccer game, football?
Well, it is interesting timing. What else might be taking place in Germany on the summer solstice?
In Vienna. It's ostensibly is where he is.
In Vienna.
But in
Spear
Germany.
Spear of Destiny is in Vienna right now, isn't it?
It is, supposedly. At least there's one copy of it that there, there are a couple of people like, no, we've got it. No, yours is fake. And we're eventually going to have a gentleman in here who is an expert on that.
Yes.
He's going to talk about that from a Christian worldview. But let's see. There are temples to Diana, Isis worship. It's really goes back to Roman times.
Well,
and before.
Pretty much
so there's
all
a
over
lot
the
of,
place.
Yeah. Well, let's face it. You take a look at the Third Reich and the evil that was going on there. That sort of stuff doesn't spring out of nowhere.
No, it doesn't. It seems that it does from the viewpoint of historians who look strictly at the physical names, places, and dates of history. But when you look at history as the movement of spiritual forces across the globe, things actually make a lot more sense. I mean, believe it or not, things actually make a lot more sense when you consider the spiritual forces at work.
Exactly. Stop thinking about what the country is called now. Stop thinking about who's in charge of the country now. Don't even think about what language the people. Go back to the Table of Nations and then figure out where these people all settled. And you can see it in the place names.
That's Genesis chapter 10, by the way.
And the Table of Nations, it relates to the 70 or 72, depending on the translation, fallen angels who were put in charge of the nations of the world. Now, today, it's a little confusing because we've got 160-plus countries in the world. But just because, you know, if we wanted to claim ourselves a country, we're sovereign now. The country of Gilbert, okay, we're going to have to recognize us and we'll have an embassy and everything. well, suddenly we'd be a country if everybody actually did recognize us. But the fact is that originally there were 70 or 72.
Mm-hmm. Well, and according to the Bible, it's 70. It's when you get into some of the other histories
right.
and the
reason
nations
I keep
around
saying
Israel.
72 is because 72 is what divides into 360 five times.
Right.
And so that has a cult significance. So there are a lot of, as you say, organizations, deep, dark, secret societies that believe 72.
Right, yeah. Refer back to our interviews with Peter Goodgame for more detail on that topic. So the scope of history and places and dates and times of the season do have significance in the spiritual war. And by no means do we pretend to understand or have a firm grasp on it. We're trying to peer, as they say, into darkness, mm-hmm. or to borrow a phrase from Paul, as through a glass darkly.
That's what the whole peer into darkness means.
Yes.
That's all that is. That's what PID
Yeah, and when he said glass, he was talking about a mirror. So not only is it dark, we're looking at things backwards. So
right.
It's really complicated. You ever try shaving when you're looking backwards into a mirror? That's really hard.
Honey, well, you do a great job.
Well, actually, I go by feel. I don't... Oops.
Oh, sorry, folks. Thump.
Time out while I put a bandage on that. So anyway, I don't know how we got there from Kim Jong-il,
well,
but still, it all
George
ties
Bush,
together.
Who suddenly is in Vienna, Austria. And I know he probably has good political reasons for being over there, but mm-hmm. you have to ask yourself, where is the president and where are any of these people that perhaps are involved in occult activities? Where are they on high holy days?
Especially when we're looking at 4,000 United States government employees that are currently participating in an exercise that requires them to be underground in these bunkers beneath mountains mm-hmm. in the Appalachians.
And when Kim Jong-il has this phallic symbol pointed at the sky. That is
That's
what
all right.
Misillusion.
I know. The Washington Monument's still bigger, so ha! Okay.
Well, now that we've just lost every one of our listeners.
That's right.
We can talk about whatever we want to now. Well, purpose-driven life takers.
Well, this is really interesting, and I saw a reference to this game. We're talking about the video game.
We've talked about this game once or twice.
That is being developed as a spin-off of the Left Behind series. And it's being called Purpose-Driven Life Takers because it appears that this game will be marketed through the network of churches.
Is that the name of the game, or is that just the name of the article?
The name of the game is Left Behind.
That's what I thought.
Yes. But the reason it's being called Purpose-Driven Life Takers, this particular article that
we
found.
Yeah, that's what I want to make clear, is the game is not called.
No, this is the Left Behind game.
That would be in your face.
Yeah. They intend to market this through churches, the way the Left Behind videos have been marketed.
Mm-hmm.
And the way certain Christian fiction novels have been marketed, by going directly through these mega churches.
Oh, yeah.
Which Rick have been
Warren's
pulled together.
All over this.
Yeah. Send out demo discs to hand out to youth groups at these big churches like Willow Creek mm-hmm. or Saddleback or
and there
Lakeside.
Are many, many up and coming mega churches that mm-hmm. go to places like Saddleback
for training
mm-hmm.
to learn how to become a mega church.
Yep.
And what is really disturbing here about this game is that it's not a first-person shooter. And I think when I first talked about this game, I might have referred to it as a first-person shooter, which is basically where you're sighting down a gun barrel and just blasting everybody.
No,
this
seems
is more
to be
of a
third-person.
Yeah, real-time strategy game. But it still involves moving troops around in a military setting and trying to outgun your opponent. And, of course, your opponent in this game is the Antichrist
mm-hmm.
and his forces. But, of course, if you get bored playing the Tribulation Force side of the game, you can switch and play the Antichrist side and blast the Tribulation Saints.
Uh-huh.
The problem is that either side is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about the way Christ commanded us to go out and win the world, looking at this from a Christian perspective now, and looking at the Bible for what Jesus commanded his disciples to do, go forth and preach the good news in every town. Mm-hmm. And if they won't listen to you in that town, leave, shake the dust off your feet as a reproach, and move on.
Mm-hmm.
You are not to take out an automatic weapon and blast the heathens into submission.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this game does. And one of the websites I looked at, which was approaching the game and critiquing it from a non-Christian perspective, sadly, was correct in its assessment of the game, which is that this is a dominionist game which in effect is training young up-and-coming Christians that this is how you do battle with the forces of darkness. Mm-hmm. Sadly, the website also assumed that all of us who profess to be Christians are believe that way.
There's that scam that, that David Duncan was talking
exactly.
about. Because I think many of the of us are being, you know, the red state folks are being lumped in there.
Right.
Not to say the blue state folks, state folks can't be Christians. I think that there are probably tons of Christians, real Christians,
sure.
in the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. Now, you may disagree with me on that, but I do believe that. And they more than likely don't like the plank, you know, some of the planks in the platform. But
at the national
I don't
level,
like
right,
some
yeah.
of the planks in the Republican platform. So there.
Well, again, this idea that you fight the forces of evil with an M1 carbine is just wrong. You don't do that. And I gather from what I've read about the game that there are some aspects of the game that involve having to, you know, keep your forces prayed up so that they won't convert over to the Antichrist side. But the bottom line is you still have to defend yourself and with weaponry.
At the very least, this game trivializes spiritual warfare.
Uh-huh. It does. And sadly, it is using a very potent marketing force, which is the Rick Warren machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a machine.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who are on the advisory board for Left Behind Games, which is developing this, include a vice president from Warner Media, which is not exactly not entirely a Christian organization. I don't know the person involved, but he or she may be a Christian. The general manager, the managing director, I forget the exact title, but basically the guy who is in charge of overseeing Rick Warren's ministries, purpose-driven mm-hmm. ministries. And therefore, I think it's a safe bet that this game will be marketed through the churches that have participated in 40 Days of Purpose.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right.
And that's not just mega churches. There are a lot of small and medium-sized churches out there across America that have participated too.
Yeah.
So we're going to see this game impacting a lot of lives out there and not in a good way.
Well, let's see.
Speaking of warfare and the cost of war, the Pentagon has reported that the two soldiers who were kidnapped in Iraq have been found and south of Baghdad. And according to their reports that they had been, well, that they showed evidence of having been tortured before they died.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard a pundit talking today on Fox News, which, of course, I usually watch Fox or MSNBC, but I'm trying to see what's going on. He, of course, was representing the liberal side
mm-hmm.
and why we need to get out of Iraq now. They're voting. They have a police. They have an army. Let's get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think John Gibson's good question was, and then what?
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen there after that? Because we won't pull out everybody. We'll leave a small force, and they'll get clobbered.
The fact that we're building that huge embassy there and this big super base outside Baghdad are, I mean, come on, we're not going anywhere.
No.
Here's the thing. Democrats and progressives who think that voting for a Democratic president in 2008 will change our policy in the Middle East vis-a-vis Iraq and Afghanistan, are sadly mistaken. We reported, based on indications we've seen on the web, and we will reiterate today with a new, well, another link to Wayne Madsen's website,
mm-hmm.
That there are voices rising within the Democratic Party that sound just like the neocons,
mm-hmm.
which isn't surprising when you look back at history and realize that the neocons running foreign policy today for the Republican Party started out as Democrats.
That we are going to go from rhinos to dinos.
Yes, Democrats in name only. Wayne Madsen reported that he was present for the launch of a new website yesterday, which is called thedemocraticstrategist.org. It is an online publication designed to appeal to the intelligentsia of the Democratic Party. Madsen asked a good question. What about people who don't use the internet that often, the guys on the shop floor or the elderly folks?
Mm-hmm.
Who are looking for, you know, the social services, social benefits to which they've contributed all their lives, you know, Social Security and so
people
forth.
People that aren't linked, you know, body and soul to
their the
computer
internet,
the way
right.
I am.
Yes, you and me. And basically he was told that, look, we're on the internet, and if they can't have access to the internet, then they can't read our publication and be hip to what's happening in the Democratic Party. But his point was that the guys who are part of this democraticstrategist.org are young little neo-libs, which I think is a new phrase that we'll have to make more use of as we get closer to that presidential election.
I like
election.
It, neo-libs.
Neo-libs, yes. Neocons and neo-libs, like Will Marshall of the Progressive Policy Institute, which is very pro-Iraq war, Donna Brazile, who was head of Al Gore's campaign and who serves on the advisory board of the Neocon Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. These are the leading lights of the next wave of Democratic policy wonks. And if you elect a Democratic president in 2008, these are the people who are going to be pulling the levers inside state and defense, just as the guys like Wolfowitz and Pearl and Libby and those guys are pulling the levers for the Republicans. Now, those guys all started out working for Senator Henry Jackson, who was a Democrat from Washington.
Yep.
And they switched parties when it became obvious that the Republicans were going to carry the day.
Yeah.
And so the neocons and neolibs are covering their bases, and it's all because it's part of the grand design, as Barry Chalmers told us, to create a Middle Eastern super state under the dominion of the U.S.
Well, here's the thing. I think that if we – not only will Iraq continue to be the U.S., you know, annex, but if we have a Democratic administration elected, and I think it's very likely we will have those guns that are now focused overseas, the Democrats love to bring everything home. Those guns are going to turn right around. In other words, suddenly the United States people, I think we're going to find that those liberties that were eroded during this Rhino administration, that those liberties really are gone.
You know,
and the Democrats are going to take full advantage of it.
If it wouldn't be so aggravating to have to live with those kind of liberties eroded, it might almost be worth it just to hear Sean Hannity squeal when President Hillary starts using those parts of the Patriot Act that he declared were absolutely necessary to guarantee our security and fight this war on terror.
I can also guarantee that Sean Hannity at that point will say, I never, ever
That's right.
defended that portion of the Patriot Act.
Yeah. Yep.
If you can find any clip where I did, I'll buy you dinner.
Yeah. And, of course, the call screeners will prevent anyone from getting through.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, absolutely.
It's all about keeping us arguing back and forth, left and right. You've got Franken on the left and Hannity and Rush and O'Reilly on the right. And ne'er the twain shall meet. And here we sit occupying the radical center.
We're stuck in the middle with you.
That's right.
Speaking you know what? Well, I wanted to bring up this story, and it's really funny. It's the story on WatcherMagazine.com is from the AP, and it's police got phone data from brokers. In other words, police, rather than doing the going to the courts and getting a subpoena to go to the to AT&T or whatever, get your phone records, they're going to these cheesy internet brokers that will call you. Hi, I'd like to offer you this and this. And they'll find ways of getting information on you, and then they will sell it to the police. What's interesting about this is I always upload these images. This image was here. It's gone now. Did it load in for you?
It did, yes.
Oh, okay. It didn't load in for me, and I thought, now how odd that that's suddenly gone, because it's an actual image that's part of the evidence that is before Congress right now, because Congress is cheesed about this.
And rightly so. Essentially, what we've got is
try reloading.
Outsourced data collection, data mining being taking place. There are companies out there that are making a profit by selling this information to not just federal law enforcement, but even local law enforcement.
Yeah,
agencies.
Local. That's what kills me. I mean, we know that federal's been doing it. But now the local boys are getting in,
right.
Boys and girls.
And as you say, they bypass the judicial branch oversight because they go straight to these guys who've somehow managed to get information out of phone companies. Or
out of companies that are these brokers that get the information.
Well, exactly. The brokers have tricked phone companies into releasing information that they should not have and which would not have been released if the law enforcement agencies had gone to a court and said, we want – you know, the phone records for these 50,000 people. Well, why? you know, that's warrants, according to the Constitution, are supposed to be specific as to what they're looking for and why. And this kind of data mining is generally frowned upon by the courts. Even in modern America, this kind of stuff usually is not quite so easy to get. But sadly, thanks to the outsourcing of this sort of data mining, it's getting easier and easier. And it will only get easier as we begin the process of integrating the United States with Canada and Mexico and merge all of that data into one huge database.
Can you Sexico?
Yes, or Canamex is probably... probably
Canamex, that sounds like something you have, you know, for dinner.
It sounds like a brand
of... Can you open up a Canamex there, hon?
Sounds like a brand of refried beans.
I know. I've got some in the pantry.
We've been talking about Jerome Corsi and the articles that he's been writing for a couple of different publications over the last few weeks about the North American Union. And he has filed a Freedom of Information Act request asking for full disclosure of the activities of this office inside the NAFTA office, which is a part of the Department of Commerce. This is the Security and Prosperity Partnership Office, which was implemented following the agreement signed by President Bush, President Fox, and Prime Minister Martin, former Prime Minister Martin, in March of last year. Corsi has requested the membership list of this SPP, meeting schedules and agendas, minutes, as well as all findings, reports, memos, and presentations. So we'll see what all comes of this. And we certainly are going to need to talk with Mr. Corsi because he seems to be leading the charge right now in terms of exposing this to the public. Most people, he said in an interview that I heard the other day that he went to Congress and was talking with congressmen about this, and most of them had never heard of it, and some of them refused to believe that there was such an office, such as the Security and Prosperity Partnership, until he actually showed them the website, spp.gov. It is there, and they are working with the Canadians and the Mexicans to merge the functions of government for the three nations into one big superstate.
Why, that's really sneaky.
Right. And in order to make sure that we're not... in order to integrate us and make sure that we're all getting the civil social services that we're supposed to have, they're going to make sure that they have information on all of us, right?
Yes. It's all for your good.
And good thing that these brokers are out there collecting it on the sly from the telephone companies and banks and whatnot so that they can just sell it right back to the government so that we don't actually have to fill out any forms. They're making it easy for us.
True, true. Well, you know, I think we're just going to have to, we're going to have to leave the rest of this fine news for our readers to discover on their own because we have an interview starting tonight with Mr. Jerry E. Smith, and he's going to talk about HAARP. If you've never heard of that, he's going to explain it to you. He does a great job.
Mm-hmm. The book is called HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, and it talks about why they've set up this monster radio antenna system. It's an array of antennas designed to beam supercharged waves up into the upper atmosphere. I spent many years in radio, and that's as technical as I can make it.
Honey, that was just so good. Why, you're amazing. Now we'll go right to Jerry Smith, who will really give us the technical know-how. Actually, Jerry will come in, and you'll hear him say that he does not claim to be an engineer who's technically, you know, up to speed, nor will he try to explain it to you in technical terms. I respect that. He's done the research. He's read the materials put out by the experts, and he's distilling it down for you and for me. So here we go, part one with Jerry E. Smith.
We're pleased to welcome to our microphones here author Jerry E. Smith. He's the author of HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, published by Adventures Unlimited Press, co-author of Secrets of the Holy Lance, and working on a future book that we'll definitely want to talk about when that's available, Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry E. Smith, please welcome to PID Radio.
Welcome to the bunker, Jerry.
Well, hi, good to be with you.
Now, you are interested in all kinds of things. How did you get on the track of any of this stuff?
Well, I've been an activist virtually my entire life. You know, I grew up in Southern California and I kind of came aware during a presidential election, the 64 presidential election, got active in that election, and then got active in social reform movements up until for the next 4 years or so, and then I discovered I was of draft age, and realized that the war in Vietnam was really not a good thing, and became an active anti-war protester activist. As the war wound down, I got involved in the ecology movement, and was very much active in that until I realized it was being taken over by collectivists. And then I spent 10 years in a monastery.
Oh my goodness!
And that kind of changed my world. And coming back out, the world was. I can really sympathize with people who are in prison for long periods of time, because you come out and the world is completely changed. You know, I grew up on free love and casual sex, and I come out and it's horribly Victorian, and AIDS has scared everybody witless. And so the liberal world I had grown up in Southern California was non-existent when I emerged from the monastery, and went into a very conservative world in Southern Oregon and Reno, Nevada, where I got involved in the Patriot Movement. And while I was in the monastery, I had met Walter Boart when he was on his national tour on Operation Mind Control, and learned about MK Ultra.
Yeah. Okay.
And at the same time, roughly the same year that I read Walter Boart's book, I read None Dare Call It Conspiracy by Gary Allen, and had pretty much the same experience he did. I went from being a radical lefty to being a radical right, and came out, and my best friend was Jim Keith, who wrote Black Helicopters Over America, Strike Force for the New World Order, and a dozen other conspiracies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's familiar to a lot of our listeners.
Saucers of
and I helped write several of his books and researched most of his books. And so I got pretty deep into mind control and the folks who I call the control freaks, the people who believe that the average Joe is simply not capable of freedom, and that we need to be controlled, and that their life would be better if they were the ones controlling us. And so the way I wrote the Heart book was one day Jim got a call from one of his publishers saying that Heart was the hottest thing going on the Internet, and could he write a book on the subject? And Jim said, no, I've got four contracts I'm working on now, but I got a friend. And he put me in touch with that publisher, Ron Bonds at Illuminet. And both Jim Keith and Ron Bonds died about a year apart under suspicious circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the first draft of HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, in 1996, and it was actually my second nonfiction book, but my first one has yet to be published, which was Toppling the Pyramid, A Practical Guide to Overthrowing the New World Order. Unfortunately, writing that book, I learned not to write on speculation, because I still haven't found a publisher for it. So I was very deep into the bad guys and what to do about them when I got the contract to write HARP. And my book on HARP is not about the technology of HARP. You know, it answers, you know, the seven questions: who, what, when, where, why, how, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I answer six of the seven questions. I understand six of the seven questions. I do not grasp how. I'm not technical. I don't know anything technical. I flunked every science class I ever took. And so my book is about the politics. It's about the why. I look at, having just written the unpublished book on the world's bad guys and global politics, that's what I write about, is how HARP how this evolving technology could be used to further globalist agendas.
Well, I think that oftentimes researchers get too caught up in the how, and I think the 9/11
mm-hmm.
research movement is a classic example, because there is so much infighting going on over the how that they are not looking at who benefits, you know, all of the
exactly.
other seven.
Yeah, the why is what really matters to me. Well,
exactly. That is something I have been commenting on and shaking my head about. Is you're quite right with that. We get all this, you know, did it fall down by itself or was it imploded and yada yada, and completely the forest with the trees miss why did it come down?
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, how is useful in doing your crime scene investigation. And of course they have conveniently removed the crime scene so that we can't actually investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
So people are going to be scratching their heads about it for the next century.
Yeah.
And those who perpetrated it are laughing all the way to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what, to get us started, for those listeners who don't even know what we're talking about when we say HARP, could you give us just a few basics? Get us started.
Certainly. HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. It is a field of antennas in southeastern Alaska that are linked together to work as one giant antenna. And it is now, as of the spring of this year, after 15 years of construction, as they just completed it, it is now the world's largest radio broadcasting station. But it's not designed to broadcast for human ears. It's designed to inject 3.6 million watts of radio frequency energy into a spot at the very top of the atmosphere with the intention of heating the atmosphere by that spot in the ionosphere
mm-hmm.
by several thousand degrees. When you heat the ionosphere, it changes. It does things. Particularly, it blows the molecules of the ionosphere apart, which causes them to give off a scream of ELF, extremely low frequency, that penetrates deep into the earth and deep into the sea. This blowing apart of the molecules is called, oddly enough, ionospheric enhancement. You got to love the military. Only they would think that breaking something makes it better. Now, an early document on HARP said, and I quote, "The heart of the program will be the development of a unique ionospheric heating capability to conduct the pioneering experiments required to adequately assess the potential for exploiting ionospheric enhancement technology for Department of Defense purposes." Translated, can they weaponize the atmosphere?
Uh-huh. Don't you love the guys who write those the applications for the patents and the people who write these manuals?
Right, right. You know, I've read that quote over several times before it sank in what the heck it really meant.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I read it, it means perfect sense to me, but most people go, what?
Well, that phrase, weaponize the atmosphere, doesn't
mm-hmm.
that make your skin crawl?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. As a anti-war activist and as an ecologist, I am very much opposed to the idea of weaponizing the atmosphere.
As someone who breathes for a living, I
right.
have a problem with weaponizing the atmosphere.
Now, this field of antennas is the project is done. The work on the ground is done by students and professors from the University of Alaska. But it's managed by a joint Navy Air Force control team, or it was, except for the last 4 years, it was taken over by DARPA, the Defense Advanced
mm-hmm.
Research Projects Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And DARPA, to give you an idea what DARPA is like, if you remember the James Bond movies, think of Q, the guy who makes the crazy gadgets for Bond.
Right.
Right. Now, imagine Q having tens of thousands of employees and billions of dollars to play with. That's DARPA.
Oh, that is scary.
Right. Now, DARPA was brought in 2002 to finish the project, which they did, and announced the completion of the project February 9th this year. And they list what they've done with it. Now, this is very curious. University of Alaska has a website for HARP that's about 3 years out of date
mm-hmm.
and says almost nothing of what they have done with HARP. It says, well, they had an open house and everybody drank milk and cookies and had a lovely time. But they don't tell you what they did with this thing. DARPA does tell you what they did with it. And what they've done with it is some pretty amazing, strange things. Would you like me to tell you?
Love for you to tell us. This is, I'm sure our listeners have their pens and paper out, and if they went out and bought a whiteboard the way we told them to, then they're ready to take notes on that.
Okay, well, if you're going to take notes, here's the deal. Go to DARPA.mil, DARPA.mil. That's the front page, the home page for DARPA. At the top of that, you'll see some tabs for major sections of the DARPA website, and one tab is for DARPA offices. You tab on offices, and it'll bring up all the various departments of DARPA. And one is the Tactical Technology Office, the TTO. If you click on TTO, it will take you to the TTO homepage. And the TTO office is the people who have run HARP for the last 4 years. And the TTO engages in, I quote, high-risk, high-payoff, advanced technology development of military systems, emphasizing the system and subsystem approach to the development of aerospace systems and tactical multipliers. HARP is a tactical multiplier. That's why they're doing it. On the left, you'll see there's a submenu, and one of the things is programs. Click on programs, and it will take you to the page for HARP. Actually, you click on programs, it will take you to a page that lists all the programs done by the TTO, and about the ninth one on the list is HARP. Click on that. It will take you to the HARP page.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, HARP, developed new experimental research capabilities and conducted research programs to exploit emerging ionosphere and radio science technologies related to advanced defense applications. HARP is not research. HARP is applications.
Now, how much, if any, or all of this is based on research that was done by Tesla?
Oh, now that's an entirely different question, and we could spend quite a ways on that. I would rather answer that question after I finish addressing this.
Okay, we'll go there later. So,
okay.
So bookmark that, folks.
Okay, so that page states that they have completed the build out to 3.6 megawatts, and to give you an idea of what 3.6 megawatts is, the largest legal AM radio station in America is 50,000 watts.
Mm-hmm.
HARP is 72,000 50,000 watts radio stations injecting their full effective radiated power, their full output into a spot that's about 2.5 miles deep by about 12 miles across by 50 to 90 miles up. Okay, now what injecting that energy has done, and what they have done with this is, one, the generation of extremely low frequency, very low frequency radio waves for submarine and other subsurface communication. The reduction of charged particle populations in the radiation belts to ensure safe spacecraft systems operations. Now, let me stop there.
I was going to say, please expand on that.
Right. Now, what this is, this if true, is a very exciting thing. This could be a very, very good thing and a reason for keeping HARP. Unfortunately, it also has a lot of potential downsides to it. And we don't really know the extent of the potential downsides because this is an area where the environmental impact state that they study that they did on HARP is complete nonsense. They did not study this at all. They only studied what the energy that came out of the antennas. They ignored where the energy went or what the energy did once it got someplace. So the environmental impact is complete nonsense. Now what they're doing here is by injecting this energy into the top of the ionosphere, it blows the molecules of the ionosphere apart and sends them out into space as a charged particle cloud, a plasma.
I was going to say this is a plasma weapon you're talking about.
Exactly. Now One of the military applications they don't mention, because they probably haven't actually used it for this, is stopping incoming ICBMs or frying enemy spy satellites.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what a charged, electrically charged cloud would do should the cloud and the electronic object meet each other. Now, this gives pause to wonder if this had anything to do with the Space Shuttle Columbia.
I was just about to ask you that.
Now, what we know is independent researchers who monitor HARP know that HARP was up and running for a full hour before reentry in this mode and continued operating for an hour after reentry. Now, what we what we think they were doing, at least what they seem to be telling us they were doing, is they were creating extra particles to go out into the radiation belts to overfill the radiation belts. If you try to pour 3 cups of water into a 1 cup glass, you're going to have 2 cups go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're trying to do is reduce the particle populations of radioactive material. Now, this radioactive material is from the sun. You know, the sun is an ongoing nuclear explosion, blows bits of atoms at us and radioactive material,
mm-hmm.
which gets caught in the Earth's magnetic field. And there are two major zones of this, and these are called the Van Allen belts, and the inner Van Allen and the outer Van Allen. And to get to the to get out into space, to actually get somewhere where it's useful to go, we have to go through the inner Van Allen belts, and to get to the moon, we got to go through the outer Van Allen belts as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a number of folks have said we can't do it, and we never went to the moon because anybody trying to go through the radiation belts would be killed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's true, but it has been a debate point for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, they apparently are trying to create precipitations. They're trying to inject so much overabundance of energy into the Van Allen belts that they precipitate out, that the radioactive particles fall from the Van Allen belt to Earth. Now, we don't know what happens when these radioactive particles reach the upper atmosphere. They may just be absorbed by the upper atmosphere and cause no problem, or they may cause a cascade effect. They interact with the upper atmosphere and drop lower and interact with that and drop lower and interact with that. We really don't know. And it's not just that I don't know, it's that this is an area where science is iffy on. But we know that when there is strong, serious major solar eruptions, major solar flares, that when the particles come in, they can get through the Van Allen belts and cause disruptions, cause weather changes, power outages, and a number of other things. So there's a decided possibility that this could make it safer for spacecraft to go through the Van Allen belts while at the same time blacking out Chicago.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Right. And again, there is the question of they were trying to do this when Columbia reentered. Were they actually making it safer for Columbia, or did the unthinkable happen, and did they actually participate in the destruction of Columbia?
Well, and wasn't there, this seems like there was a rumor of a coincidental discovery of a North Korean missile.
Right, right. And this is very, very hard to substantiate. There's very minimal corroborating evidence. What I have as corroborating evidence to that is a Korean missile warhead was found in Alaska. And it was found a date coincident with the Columbia breakup. It was found a few days or a few weeks after the event.
Mm-hmm.
And we have I have a transcript of a story in a Tokyo newspaper that ran a news article that the Prime Minister of Tokyo had spoken to his parliament and read a letter from the U.S. State Department to North Korea, which basically said, "We found your warhead. Please don't do that again."
Mm-hmm.
Now,
I've seen that article. Yeah.
Yeah. Now there's a website called Brother Jonathan Gazette. John.
I was going to ask you if you're familiar with him, because
right.
I look at that probably once a week.
Yeah, brojon.com, brojon.org. That's run by Marshall Smith, who's an ex-NASA scientist. Marshall Smith maintains that what had happened was the Chinese wanted to know if HAARP did make an anti-ICBM field, if the plasmas created by HAARP were in fact capable of stopping incoming ICBMs. So they decided to, when the talks with the North Koreans broke down, they used their pet bulldog or pit bull to lob a missile at the U.S. And they decided the best way to do it would be to wait until Colombia was in reentry, and they were using this to try and help Colombia in, and then they could see whether or not this actually did stop their missile, and it may have actually stopped Colombia at the same time.
Oh.
Now that's a stretch. It's hard to say that that's really what happened. But we do know that we found a North Korean missile in Alaska, mm-hmm. and one has to wonder how it got there and when, and there may be indeed a connection here.
Well, we'll continue discussing what the connection is or where else or how else HAARP might be employed by the United States military as we continue discussing HAARP, the ultimate weapon of the conspiracy, with author Jerry E. Smith tomorrow on PID Radio.
You can check out Jerry's website at jerryesmith.com. That's J-E-R-R-Y-E Smith, S-M-I-T-H.com. And there will be information about that book, about his book, Secrets of the Holy Lance,
mm-hmm.
and other projects that he's currently working on. And we will have part two of the interview for you tomorrow night.
You know, he's a fascinating guy, and this whole HAARP project, I can't remember if it was in the part that you listened to tonight where he discusses the Brother John Gazette website, but brojohn, B-R-O-J-O-N .com.
Yeah, I think so. It is Brother John's Gazette, which is sort of a news and intelligence site similar to WatcherMagazine.com.
Brojohn.org.
Okay. He has a monitor for a HAARP monitor on that website, so you can take a look at the website and see instantly whether HAARP is on or off and when it was used and for how long and at what strength.
Well, there you go. Everything you ever needed to know about what happened with HAARP yesterday. We're going to be keeping an eye on what happens with our new job.
Well, yeah. Speaking of radio waves, I guess we can disclose it now since I went into the office today at the steel company and talked to the bosses. And
You haven't told your mom yet, though.
Well, no. I got to call mom after the show.
No. I don't know. Did you ask for permission?
As of July 17th, I will be beginning a position at an FM talk radio station in Columbia, Missouri, which is called The Eagle, 93.9 FM, doing a 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. daily talk program, well, weekdays, Monday through Friday. That, of course, is UTC-5 if you're elsewhere. It does stream on the Internet. There's a live stream, so if you're outside the country and you happen to be awake at that hour and choose to listen in, that's fine. We will, as I understand it, be revamping the website in the next couple of weeks. So I'll be hitting the ground with a brand new website, which will include podcasting, but I don't have any details on how that's going to go.
You're also the program director.
I didn't mention that. I will be the program director. So I will have some latitude as to the content of the program.
So if there's something special you'd like to see the Eagle do in their format, let me know. I've got an inside track with the program director.
That's right. The interesting thing is, and if you've been listening to our podcast for a while, PIDcast that is, you have an idea of where we stand politically, which is smack dab in the middle.
That's right. And it's uncomfortable.
Too socially conservative.
Sitting on that fence is tough.
That's right. They've got barbs on it.
I know.
And the time slot, which I will be filling, currently sits right in between the Sean Hannity show and the Michael Savage show. So I'll be the voice of reason in there. But actually, you know, they do good jobs with what they do, and they are very talented broadcasters. So it will be a challenge to get up to speed because, frankly, we've been doing this program now for over a year.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it in a radio setting when you've got to hit the commercial breaks right mm-hmm. at the, you know, certain points in the clock and at the top of the hour. And we did that when we did the RBN show
yep.
for the 4 weeks. But it will be a little different, especially then when there are people out in the hallway looking in through the window. You mm-hmm. know, it's like trying to get your attention for a question that needs to be answered immediately mm-hmm. and other things of that nature. But it is a door that the Lord has opened, and it's well, frankly, this is the kind of thing I've wanted to do since I was a little kid. When
in
my
some
friends,
ways, you're still a little kid, I'm glad.
True. So anyway, that's what we're looking forward to. We've got a lot of things to do between now and then. The bunker will be relocating a few inches to the left on your map, and we will. We are happy to report that we've got a wonderful home for Java already.
Yep.
The lady who grooms the dogs.
You know, the second day we had Java, we took her, you know, we're firm believers in vet care.
Mm-hmm.
And so every dog we've had, the minute we get that dog and can get into the vet, we always take that puppy over and get him or her always checked out. And she had her first vet visit the second day we had her. And the groomer was there that day. And Java hadn't really started to show her symptoms of parvovirus yet.
Mm-hmm.
She was a little sleepy, but she was still, you know, seemed like a really healthy puppy. Everybody fell in love with her that day. Had she never gotten sick, they would have loved that dog. But because she got sick over the mm-hmm. weekend, and Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of the following week, she was over there in intensive care, the groomer, all of the vet techs, all of the doctors, everybody fell in love with Java.
Yeah.
So when I called today to cancel her appointment this week and to explain why we were holding off the alteration, her spaying,
mm-hmm.
in case whoever takes her would like to have the opportunity to
breed a Dorky.
Breed a Dorky because I know it sounds really silly with a name like Dorky, but they're a designer breed. They're really highly desirable.
Mm-hmm.
Be called right back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I need that dog.
Mm-hmm.
So Java has a home. We are working on getting Murphy a home.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in your prayers. That's going to be tough, tough, tough. Java will bounce right back. Day two,
yeah.
She'll be fine.
Murphy's been with us for 6 years.
Six and a half.
Yeah.
It's going to be tougher on Murphy. And frankly, it's tough on us. But we really firmly believe that it's the kinder thing to do for them to find them really loving homes
mm-hmm.
where they can run free in the backyards just like they do here
mm-hmm.
instead of asking them to live in a one- or two-bedroom apartment.
Which is likely what we're going to take,
mm-hmm.
at least in the short run, until we get to know the community and know our schedules. Because, frankly, as we go into a college town, that opens up a lot of opportunities for you.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, return to school maybe or...
Yeah.
Take advantage of some of the musical opportunities there.
Yeah, or who knows? I could start back on that PhD program and be a mad scientist.
So, in the meanwhile, we appreciate your prayers in that regard, and there have been some very kind and very thoughtful comments on the forum at peeringintodarkness.com/forum, and we do appreciate that.
By the way, if you have not yet begun your project to enter the Illuminati,
yes.
You need to get on that because, of course, July 31st. Now, mind you, we will be a little bit busy as we make the move westward, but we're still going to check those emails.
That's right.
We're looking for those pictures.
Full details are going to be linked in the show notes, so check the show notes at pidradio.com, and that will provide you a link to the rules of the game. And we look forward to receiving those entries. Our email address, if you have a comment for us or question, is radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And, of course, you can come by the forum. As we say many times, it's open 24/7, 365, and we almost have 300.
Yeah, I think
300.
We're as of
297
today,
or 298 or something.
298 as of this afternoon.
So, come on, you can be that magic 300th person.
That's right. And until tomorrow, when we bring you the second part of our interview with Jerry E. Smith, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye.
is PID Radio.